All right, last week we stepped out as Joseph went to prison for something he didn't do. Now, when I spent my 6 months in jail, everybody in there was innocent. They didn't do it, with one exception. There was a fella who told me straight up, he said, "Oh no, I was stupid, got my third DUI, and here I am. I'm doing my 30 days," and he said, I'm already on a rehab program, so this never happens again. And I hoped I could have believed him. So I'm hoping he stayed out, especially because he was a very high-profile name in the world of construction and contracting in the greater Portland area. He told me his name. I let it go. You know, inmates were allowed to volunteer stuff. We were not allowed to volunteer anything back. It can turn around and bite you too fast. Anyway, he gets tossed into prison because he did not commit adultery with Popper's wife. But she said he did. And we kind of explored the idea that, well, okay, normally a slave attempts rape. There's no court. Just take him out in the back 40 and kill him. Be creative if you want to be. Make all the rest of the household slaves watch. So they're encouraged not to try the same thing. But this didn't happen. Either Potiphar knew something about his wife, or he recognized something in Joseph. But the bottom line is, the Lord was with Joseph. Potiphar recognized that, don't severely mess with this guy. He has capital T, the capital G, God, in him. Once again, Joseph lands on his feet. He found favor with the Gick, guy in charge. If you can't have a little fun with the language. So, okay. The head jailer, one step below Potiphar, puts Joseph in charge of the king's prison. Really? Okay, I'm in charge of Potiphar's house. All right, now I've slid down a rung on the ladder, socially. But this is one step below the guy getting paid to do this. Joseph's not getting paid, but this is a minimum security. These are for minor offenders. And two of Pharaoh's officials offended him. And it was nothing like, you know, they threw off his groove and so they got defenestrated. Okay, this is a crowd that doesn't have enough grandkids to watch the emperor's new groove 20 years ago. But, but they were given to the captain of the guard, Potiphar, to be put in the king's prison. We're not going to kill him. We're not going to hang him in a dungeon from the wall. There's a chance these folks can be rehabilitated, so we'll keep him in a minimum security place and take relatively good care of him. But then from that, the guy in charge says, "Joe, these are Pharaoh's officials. They're yours. Take care of these clowns. I mean these guys." And they each had their own story to tell. One of them, how many of your versions use butler? How many of the versions that we have scattered out here use the word butler? How many use chief overseer? How many use cupbearer?
Yes.
That's generally the way it's rendered. That's generally the sense of the original language. This was a person, butler, cupbearer is better rendering. He's the chief taster of everything that goes before the Pharaoh.
Before he eats.
Yeah, before the Pharaoh eats or drinks anything, it passes over this guy's lips. Nobody else, because it has to go through one person. If this cupbearer falls to the floor and starts twitching, well, they won't feed the Pharaoh that whatever it was. Okay, you did, you know, you're the canary. You're the canary down in the mine. This was a critical position in the administration of any Royals court. Big kitchen operation. They've got to feed everybody in the Pharaoh's household at any given meal. How many opportunities for the enemies of the Pharaoh would there be to slip something into his food or his wine? Lots. So it all came to a fulcrum point on one man, the cupbearer. The one who tasted the wine, the one who tasted everything, small portion of what was going to be placed before the Pharaoh. High honor, high risk. Because if somebody's after the Pharaoh and is careless about when the timing goes, yeah. This is the guy that gets it in the net. I saw it. Let it.
I would suggest that that in itself was the deterrent to them to even try to poison. So here the cupbearer said, whoa, this is a good position. I get to eat the king's food and I'm not worried about poison because they know they're not looking to me.
They're not going to get the Pharaoh, are they? Yep, they're not going to get the Pharaoh. They're going to get the flunky or the cupbearer.
There are a lot of volunteers for that job.
You read through the historical documents and they're either appointed, they're volunteered, they knew somebody, or their family. You know, the one you don't like.
Good funeral.
Yeah, good funerary benefits. You get embalmed and you get your own section in the pyramid. Debbie, what you got?
I know it's off subject, of course. Well, you always see or hear about like priests or drinking wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought alcohol was a sin. And then I get confused.
Okay.
Because it seems like it's okay if they drink wine, but to me, wine is an alcohol.
Oh, there's definitely alcohol in it, which was what made it the beverage of choice. The water's not safe.
Okay.
Lots of parasites. Lots of amoebas, lots of things that will make you sick, give you cholera, give you dysentery, give you trichinosis, who knows?
Gotcha, okay.
No refrigeration, perfect. Wine with the alcohol kills that stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
And typically throughout the ancient world, wine was concocted.
Right.
It was fermented.
Okay, I get it.
And then before it was served, it was cut with something else. Usually water, but the alcohol was trusted to kill the bad stuff in it.
Right. Okay.
So this was his job. Cut the wine appropriate for the palate of the Pharaoh. Make sure that nothing in there is going to kill him. Yeah. But it is a good question. But nowhere in the Bible are we told that alcohol of itself is sinful.
Okay.
We are told the abuse of it is.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's okay. Ephesians 4:18.
Okay.
Fourth chapter of Ephesians 18th verse, Paul tells them clearly, do not be drunk on wine. That is dissipation.
Gotcha.
Rather, be filled with spirit. His challenge there is, if you're gonna look for an altered state, let it be the Spirit of God, not anything artificial you're injecting or producing from the outside.
And wine is not grape juice either. Grape juice is grape juice.
Wine,
a lot of people want to say that, it's just grape juice. Well, it's not.
It's nothing. Wine has to be treated specially to take grapes and the juice thereof and make it an alcoholic beverage. So we get our second official, the baker, kitchen worker. Oddly enough, indirectly under the oversight of this guy, because he had responsibility for all food and drink that's produced that could end up on Pharaoh's table. He's the head baker, oftentimes rendered chief baker. He provided the bread. What is it? It's still on it. But without my eyeballs on up here, It was all for Pharaoh's table, and it was all good stuff. However, this is a non-critical position. Anybody can do bread. And they're not in a position of responsibility directly over the Pharaoh's safety with what he puts in his mouth. Now, both of these new inmates had a dream. And it was not that all children everywhere shall one day... No, sorry. This is a thing in Egypt. Dreams were hugely significant. Same night, they each dream. Each one has a dream specific to his role. They were believed to be divine communications. And this is a small g gods. Their deities, this is what they believed, wanted one to know something. Therefore, they would communicate in a vision or a dream. But they had no access to the court seers while they are in prison. So it bummed them out. Morning comes, as it inevitably does. Sometimes I resent it more than others. Joseph comes down into where these two are incarcerated and says, "Hey guys, quit horsing around. Why are you downcast? Why the long faces?" Well, because dreams were seen as portents for Egyptians, they have no current access to the palace seers. They were at a loss because they had nobody to interpret what their dreams meant. Joseph's reply, bold statement. Remember, Joseph, every time he has been relocated, he has landed on his feet for one reason. The Lord is with Joseph. He found favor in Potiphar's eyes, because Potiphar recognized the Lord is with him. He found favor with the head jailer, because the Lord was with him. And here's what he says. "Do not all interpretations belong to God?" These two guys don't know God. They know a lot of little g gods. Osiris, Isis, the jackal-headed god, the crocodile-headed god, the fly-headed god. Now, there's a winner. But it's all in the statuary and the paintings on the walls in the various valleys of the kings and queens and the tombs they're in. It's an amazing stroll through there. You're not allowed to take flash pictures because it fades the paint. But what they can do, this is crazy. It has nothing to do with the lesson, but it's an interesting insight too. Creativity. They have somebody standing at the main entrance into a tomb, and you've gone down and you've turned three or four different corners, and there's very low floor lighting. But then this guy's got a mirror, and he angles it, and it shoots sunlight down to a guy at the first corner with a mirror, to a guy at the second corner with a mirror, to a guy in the gallery where you're standing with a mirror, and he goes, and you get a look at all of it. Clever, huh? And, you know, they did worship the sun god. This was a radical concept in Egypt because of those multiple deities. What do you mean, God? Duh. No S. "Please, tell me your dreams, gentlemen." Okay, cupbearer. "All right, I'll go. I saw a vine. It had three branches. And as I watched, it budded, it blossomed, and it fruited. All in the course of, I'm just watching it. It's like one of those CGI movie things, you know, where they fast forward and everything happens. And then I took that cluster of grapes it produced and I squeezed it into the Pharaoh's cup." Okay, this is what you figuratively did for your career up to this point. We're never told what he did to get tossed in prison. Joseph interprets. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and fully restore you to your former position. At this point, the guy's going, "Ooh, I like the sound of that." You know, it's like, yes. And then he says, one favor. When you get back, remember me to Pharaoh. As in, tell Pharaoh about this guy who told you about your restoration and how it happened exactly. Okay. The baker. Ooh, that sounds good. Okay. Here's mine. I had 3 baskets full of bread. I was carrying them on my head. And this is still common in modern Egypt. You walk into one of the, what they call the souk, the market. Big flat baskets. The bottom one is huge. It's very round and it has a really stable center of gravity. You put a rolled up, that you've seen this. This is all over in the markets in Nairobi, isn't it? Yeah, you've seen this. You know exactly. They put a rolled up kerchief or something and it makes a flat spot on the top of their head. I mean, some of us have a flat spot on the top of our head. And then there's another basket set on that and a third basket set on that. And that's how they get their wares to the market. And you could have anything up there. Periodically, when we were living in West Africa, I would be awakened really early as somebody's walking down the road to get to the market right about daylight. And such a racket, because they had 3 or 4 live pigs in the basket on top of their head. And they objected.
Three little pigs
going to the market. And they would object. Yeah, you know, what's a little sight loss when you get to see something like that? So all the stuff in my baskets, all these baked goods were primo, and they were for Pharaoh. It's all really good stuff. But then these birds kept coming down and eating out of the top basket. Well, yeah, it's up there. They're going, ooh, mobile treats, zoom.
If you didn't have a babysitter, you could find a baby.
Many did. You would see a woman with a cloth wrapped, and as she's walking, she's nursing the littlest one. The other wrap has the toddler on her hip, and then there might be a smaller one or a mid-sized one in the basket on her head.
Really?
Yes.
That was just amazing.
Yes. It's amazing, but this is really common. Wow. In places other than the U.S. Okay. It's normal. It's how things get done. Yeah. So Joseph says to the baker, okay, I'll tell you what this is going to be. 3 baskets equals 3 days. Uh-huh. Get there. In 3 days, yeah. Pharaoh will lift off your head. Prepositions are important. Excuse me? That's not what you told him. I know, this is your dream, pal. Yeah. Prepositions are important. One of my grandmothers, she taught high school English for 31 years. And we used to drive her nuts when we'd say things to her like, "Grandma, is it true you're not supposed to use a preposition to end a sentence with?" "Grandma, is it true you ain't supposed to say ain't 3 times the same sentence because it ain't right?" And then her crochet needle would come whizzing across the room. Anyway, you will be beheaded. Your body will be hung on a tree. Public display, again, for encouraging others. And again, we don't know the offense. We just know it was serious enough that, yeah. And then the birds will come down and eat your flesh. And as grisly as that sounds, this was a very common punishment. To be beheaded and either impaled on a pole and hung by a cross street where everybody that went by had to watch it, or hung on the wall of a government building where everybody had to watch it. I mean, this was a great warning system for administrators and functionaries in the government.
Oh yeah, that guy used to.
Better watch my step this week.
What about Haman and Esther?
Yeah. Haman and Esther? Yeah. Wait, you peeked ahead. Yes, you're correct. And when we get into that particular rendering of an event from the exile of Israel, that it's exactly the same idea. And you know, Pastor was talking this morning about the Assyrians. They were not nice. Where'd they learn this stuff? Ancient Egypt. Yeah, the Assyrians perfected the art of flaying somebody. You understand what that is? Mm-hmm. Extremely sharp knife and removing the skin. And the best ones that worked for the kings could keep somebody alive the entire way. Yeah, Patty, you got it right. Yeah. So, in this case, they're going to let the birds do it. 3 days later, we have Pharaoh's birthday. Yeehaw! Yeah, this is a great time of celebration, of feasting, of excess, yes, but also of honoring those the Pharaoh wished to honor and passing judgment on those that unduly upset the Pharaoh. This is perfectly natural. Did Joseph know the calendar ahead of time? Is that how he got this right? No. He's been in jail. Everything happened precisely as Joseph said. Right down to the last detail, the cupbearer fully restored, functioning in his role. The baker beheaded and publicly hung as an example to those who would commit other such crimes. Again, we don't know what they were. We just know that this was important in the formation of Joseph's future. The cupbearer forgot. Was he really forgotten? Somebody said no. Or was it just not God's time yet? 2 years. They still don't work right. 2 years after the events of chapter 40, Pharaoh dreams. Yes, this thought plickens. Something like that. Pharaoh has two dreams. Two dreams. Sorry, this hand isn't working. I love the King James here. Fat kind. Wasted kind. In the King James era, kind was the plural of cow. Yes! Isn't that fun? Anyway, well-fed cows rise from the Nile. And this is not something mystic like, ooh, no, they come. Drip, 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 drip. Exactly. Many in the who write the literature about these things, the Nile was a common place to not only water but also bathe the cattle. And the cattle got into it too, because it's hot and there's stinging bugs all over. So they would go down into the water almost voluntarily when the herdsmen would take them there. And then they would fully submerge, and then as they came walking back up the bank, it was a gradual emergence as they got to their full height and walked out. And that's the idea being conveyed. They rose out of the Nile. There's nothing mystic, it's just a cool picture. The emaciated cows follow. Huh. And then the skinny cows eat the fat ones. Predictable. They're starving. They owe their food. A little cannibalistic, if you ask me, but And then he's got fat ears of grain and blighted or wasted ears of grain And the same pattern. The wasted consumes the full. Huh. Kind of like that.
Oh, that's so...
God, all right.
Terrible.
But apparently, after all is said and done, these win, eat those, but they don't look any different. They don't look any different. They're still wasted. Kind of like this, when it came down to the grain. I realize that's a little corny to put up there, but there it is. This is a good time to say, he who has ears, let him hear. Sorry that, you know, I'm still suffering because of that thought struck me. It's like, you know, the old nursery rhyme about stuff like that. Hickory dickory dock. Three mice ran up the clock. The clock struck one, and the other two escaped with minor injuries. Pharaoh awakes, and the biblical phrase is so generic and so low-key. Troubled in spirit. Apparently, linguistically, we get the idea of, he comes flying up out of his bed and he is just completely lost. He is so freaked out. He summons all the wise guys of the kingdom. Oops. What about that kid?
Should have been the Three Stooges.
Yeah, right? He summons all the wise guys of the kingdom, maybe not the slayer, but the diviners, the seers, the occult practitioners, anybody with any skill in the arcane, the hidden arts, the mysteries, the strange, the brewing of herbs and potions to create altered states of consciousness. Nobody, not a one of them, can help the Pharaoh render any sense of his dreams. Hey, look at this. Cupbearer. Ooh, pick me. Kind of like Vinny, you know, from
Arnold.
Welcome Back, Cotter.
Arnold.
What?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
You're talking about the guy that does.
Yeah. That, yes. Finally, little light bulb goes on in the, well, okay, maybe an oil lamp, goes on in the cupbearer's head. Oh, wait a minute. It's been 2 years. You know what? Pharaoh, he's standing right there because he is an attendant to the throne. There was this young guy. Remember when Baker and I were in prison? Yeah, we had dreams, literally.
Interesting point.
I'm sure it will be.
Does the cupbearer know to give the dreams, and they're all in Pharaoh's hit list, and then you think about the two dreams, the one that the cupbearer had and the one that the baker had. So here's the cupbearer, and why does God allow the two dreams? Because now the cupbearer knows that Joseph will not give a false rendition. He will tell the truth no matter what the truth is.
Bingo. And at this point, you can just see the dawning realization of the cupbearer, hope. I just connected all this. This guy can help us. And I'm going to save the lives of all these underlings who can't do, because I can figure this out. And he tells the Pharaoh, there was a young man who was serving the prisoners when the baker and I were incarcerated. And he interpreted everything he told us happened precisely as he told us it would. That's an amazing claim. Because scripturally, we're given several other places where dreams play a role. And in many of those places, I'm thinking specifically Daniel 3. Nebuchadnezzar, the most powerful monarch in the known world at that time, had a dream, but he knew a truth about his wise guys. If he tells them the dream, they will put their heads together and cook something up. Therefore, he put them to the test and said, "Tell me the dream, then give me the interpretation." And they're all standing there looking at each other like, nobody can do that. Nobody can do that. Tell us what you dreamt and we'll figure it out for you. Because I know you will make something up to keep me happy. And Nebuchadnezzar didn't want that. Same thing here. Everything that the two functionaries of the palace dreamt, Joseph gave specific, explicit explanation of how it was all going to go down. That was what led to, this is a royal summons, but it's also, finally, the divine summons. Here's another great King James phrase. The divine summons out of durance vile. I always like that word. Sorry. I know, you learn too much about me when I do this. What's a mother to do? Wait, I heard a mother. Okay, that's good. He's shaved, he's cleaned up, he's dressed, he is made ready for a court command performance. Get him cleaned up. He'd been 2 years in this silly dungeon, that's it, you know. Now, it's not the dank, dark, water-infested, rat-infested place, but still. Pharaoh, all right, young man. I've had dreams that nobody can interpret. Can you hear the menace in that? It's not actually in the text. It's a side footnote, some scribal tradition or something. Somebody wrote it out there in the margin. But it's like, see all these wise guys? They can't do anything.
What are you going to do about it?
I am told that you can give me the interpretation, or it was two dreams, so interpretations. Joseph, very quick to clarify. He doesn't hedge. He doesn't play around. He doesn't mince words. It's not in me to interpret. It is not in me to interpret. God can give Pharaoh peace in this matter. You gotta wonder what went through Pharaoh's mind at this point. God? What God? We got a boatload of them, and most of their servants are right here, and they're powerless. They haven't a clue. But Joseph told him, God can give you peace in this. Joseph was probably a reasonably astute recognizer of body language. He could tell the Pharaoh was distressed. So his answer promised peace. So Pharaoh says, all right, I'll give you a shot. Full cows. They get devoured by wasted cows. And dream number two, full ears of grain. Devoured by the blighted, the wasted ears of grain. Joseph interprets fully. Your dreams are one, Pharaoh. Your dreams are one. God is revealing, implicit is, to you what is about to happen. You're sitting in the court, all the magicians, conjurers, sorcerers, and others of that ilk are standing in the audience floor, and everybody is going. It's like when E.F. Hutton spoke.
People listen.
They're paying attention because Joseph makes this incredible statement. God
is revealing what he is about to do. Wouldn't it be nice if we got that kind of direction sometimes? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a dream, somebody comes up and says, you dreamt last night, this is what it was, and God's telling you what's about to happen. Ooh, I like that. Yeah, I probably wouldn't like the answer though. The fat cows, the full ears of grain, 7 years of incredible plenty are coming. Animals and crops are going to produce over abundantly. You're going to be swimming in grain. You're going to be plowing your way through cattle. It's amazing what's going to happen. The wasted cows, the blighted ears, the consume. I think you're seeing where I'm going, Pharaoh. 7 years of famine will follow. So severe that all the excess, scripturally we're told, will be forgotten. Ooh. Nothing from the prior 7 years is going to be left. Can you hear the advisors of the king, of the Pharaoh? Uh-oh. What do we do? How do we fix this? We've got a warning, but oh my goodness, all those good years are going to be forgotten. Joseph tells the Pharaoh, this doubling up of this dream, you got it twice, two different forms. You know what this means? It's fixed in the mind of God. This will happen, and it's going to be soon. This is setting off panic in the bureaucracy. How on earth are we supposed to deal with this? We're supposed to advise the Pharaoh. What? Huh? And this guy's telling him that, oh, it's going to be great for 7 years. And then after that, it's going to be worse than we are right now. Lovely. What on earth do we do with this? It was necessary that they panic, that they have this shock reaction. Oh, my word, what are we supposed to tell the Pharaoh? Still speaking on behalf of God, let Pharaoh take steps now. You're getting a really good warning, and God has promised, assured, double down, this is gonna happen. It's not gonna change. So take wise steps now. Choose one. And that can be rendered and often is rendered in some of our translations. Choose one man. Modern inclusivism would have us say, choose one person of wisdom and discernment. Place overseers under him. Collect 1/5, 20% of everything produced over the next 7 years. You see the glimmer of, that could work. That might work. Set up huge storehouses. Build them everywhere that produces grain or meat. Bring in all the collected food service, the foodstuffs from each bumper crop year. Protect the land from starvation. The famine years will happen too. That's a serious thing. Because you get a drought, or you get trouble in the headwaters of the Nile, and Egypt could be ruined virtually overnight. They had to have that water of the Nile. They had to have the fertility of the crops from that water of the Nile. They had to have everything in place or the economy would collapse. This pleased the Pharaoh and the whole court. It's like, ooh, goody. Now we know what's going to happen. Wait a minute. He said appoint somebody who's really good with this stuff, who can set a plan in motion. A crisis was foretold. They're warned. We got precise instructions for how to deal with it. You know, I worked for 25 years in the school system, and one thing that was abundantly clear, the administration wasn't.
Amen, brother.
The administration wasn't. Well, and Ron, you were in the Navy. You worked for a living. Officers were suspect in that. Because sometimes the things they asked you to do didn't make any sense on your level, and then it took a CPO to say, hey, Ensign, you sure you want to do that? Or should we do it a little bit different way, and then these guys will know exactly what they have to do? You never ran into that, did you? But what happens at the administrative level, when it trickles down through a bureaucracy, sometimes you can make neither head nor tail of it. But this time, not only was the crisis clearly described, they were told exactly how to handle it. Ooh, this is good. Choose the one who told us about it to be the new chief operating officer. He's clearly got something going on, so he should be good at this. Pharaoh says, good call. Thank you for volunteering. You know, I once worked for somebody. If you pointed out something, like you sent an email, a memo, you call them on the phone and say, this isn't working. Okay, good. I'm glad you saw that. Draft a plan to fix it and send it to me. It's your job. Joseph didn't do that. Pharaoh says, you have the God within you. He can see that clearly. When the Lord's favor rests on somebody, it's visible externally. And however it's going to come away, their speech, their thought patterns, their general life, all of the above, everything Joseph touched prospered. Remember, from Potiphar's house, in the jail, everything Joseph touched prospered, except for the baker. But the cupbearer, absolutely, because that cupbearer had to be in this position 2 years later in order to bring Joseph in front of the Pharaoh, in order for all of this to happen. You are going to be raised to the highest office in the land. This is not royalty, this is not nobility, this is highest administrative office. We might call it prime minister, vizier. Only my throne, i.e. me, will be higher than you, Joseph. He goes from a prison trustee to the second highest guy in the land in a single afternoon. And the following honors are going to be heaped on you. Royal signet ring. In other words, the authority to carry out your decisions. You take this ring and you put it into that damp clay at the bottom of that document, and you put that ring back on, that has the force of my law now. And if people don't like it, they can come to me. It's not going to happen. You don't go to Pharaoh to whine about an order. I'll give you fine clothing. Anybody catch an irony there? What happened the last time he was given a fine piece of clothing? He ended up here.
Tearaway jersey like the NFL used to have.
Tearaway jersey, exactly. Exactly. He ended up here the last time he was given special clothing. The upshot was, he's here. I'm also going to give you a very ornate gold necklace. The text does not describe this for us, but extra-biblical sources and Egyptologists tell us the heavier the weight thickness of the chain and the more ornate the medallion on it, the more significant and important that person was. I mean, he was wearing the Sistine Chapel ceiling on his chest.
Mr. G?
Pardon me?
Mr. G.
Mr. G. Yeah. We'll call him Mr. J. Yeah. He also grants him the privilege of second chariot. And we're going, yeah, so? In that day and age, that meant something. Second place in any royal procession. First place was always given to the heralds and the bodyguards, then the pharaoh. But yeah, people running out, pharaoh's on their way, bow down, and the bodyguards are, you know, in a phalanx. Wait, that wasn't invented until Alexander. The bodyguards were in a wedge-shaped formation out in front. And the pharaoh, whether it was chariot or foot, was going through somewhere. That included, for Joseph, the heralds between the pharaoh's train and him. No. Nope, don't look up, keep bowing. This guy's almost as important. Joseph, nobody acts without your permission. No. Everyone is to be subservient to you. The last time he had fine clothing, and he told people that they were going to bow to him, yeah, that didn't work out very well. That was 13 years ago, yeah.
Just thinking for a minute, when Joseph was told that he's going to come before the Pharaoh, he probably thought, oh good, this is my opportunity to at least get out of jail. I think about the verse we know, above all God, above all that we ask or think.
Yeah, this was a little different than just, oh, I can get out of jail and I can go back to my job. You got a new job. And it's way more than a job. Way more than a job. In addition, he gives him a new name. I'm not even going to try. But the name means either revealer of secrets, revealer of things hidden, or those to whom the hidden things have been revealed. Regardless of how it is rendered, that's huge. Because it tells everybody, this is who this guy is. Don't mess with him or his God. He'll tell you things about yourself. Oops. Do you ever think for even a split second what our world would be like if for even 10 seconds we knew every internal thing about the people we could see, and they knew the same?
Nice.
Yeah, we're all digging and, you know, digging deep holes and pulling them in after us. This name about the secrets, this was full-on recognition that God resides within Joseph. The Spirit of God belongs over and within this young man. He's only 30. He was 17 when he was exiled. He's only 30 here. Still, that's 13 years to wonder what on earth God had in store for him. He was also given a wife, one of the highest born wives in the kingdom. She was a daughter of the priest of On. On was the sun deity. On was the highest of the pantheon of Egypt. This was that very politically powerful group of priests. In theory, they could override one of Pharaoh's decisions. Oof. Not quite Yul Brynner in his let it be written, let it be done. A priest of On could say, strike that. Yeah.
Jeff,
yes.
I was just thinking.
Oh, quit that, it hurts. Okay. Maybe I'm the only one.
If the sun god's name was On, so when it was cloudy, did that mean he was off?
Could be. I like the way you think. Joseph lands on his feet again, atop the corner, this corner of his world. And get this, because of dreams. Remember with his own family? Dreams didn't work out so good for him. Now the dreams of three different people? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He's 30 when he assumes this office. He's second in command of all of Egypt. He immediately surveys the kingdom. Why? We've got to figure out what we're going to do with all this food that's going to come in. He commissioned the building of this incredible network of storehouses. He began collecting, and it was regional. They didn't have to travel far, no spoilage. They did it. During the 7 years of plenty, a couple of things happened. Children are born to Joseph and his wife. Manasseh, the firstborn. The name means forgetting. Huh. Ah. God has I may not be able to read, but there it is. God has made me forget my troubles. So he commemorates that with the name of his firstborn. The second one, I highlighted the red because this is a name in the plural. That I am suffix in Hebrew is a plural. I am doubly fruitful. Now, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Wow. Come a long way from his father's house, where he was the 11th son and highly resented. Why? Because the Lord was with Joseph.